This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for January 12, 2006. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. And later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois. In agricultural news, the American Farm Bureau Federation wrapped up its annual meeting with a few more resolutions. We'll have a report. Also, lawmakers are contemplating a new Illinois renewable fuel standard. I'll have details of these and other stories this half hour. And Todd Gleason will be by with a look at the concluded 2005 growing season through the eyes of one extension entomologist. It's all on the Thursday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
Thursday afternoon, prices settled like this. Kansas City March wheat, 382 and three quarters, up 7 3/4. March wheat at Chicago, 333 and a quarter, up 2 3/4. May, 344, up 2 3/4. March corn, 212 and three quarters, down 1 3/4. May, 222 and a quarter, down 1 3/4. July, 230 and a half, down 1 3/4. September, 238, down 1 1/4. January soybeans, 562, down 12 1/2. March, 572, down 12 1/2. July, 590 and a quarter, down 12 3/4. November, $6 and a quarter, down 9 3/4. January soybean meal, 178.80, down 250. January soybean oil, 21.43, down 45. On the Merck, January feeder cattle, 112.87 1/2, up 82 1/2. February live cattle, 95.12 1/2, up 90. February lean hogs, 59.77 1/2, down 90 on the day. Joining us on the telephone to talk about the markets is Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. Good afternoon, Dan.
Good afternoon, Dave.
In light of what was going on pretty much across the complex, wheat had a nice little rally today. To what do we owe it?
Well, the increase in plantings was not as large as what the trade was looking for, and especially in the western wheat areas, the hard winter wheat areas, therefore that kind of really puts the hard red wheat complex in a situation that could get fairly tight, given the weather pattern that basically the southern plains has experienced. You've got Texas and Oklahoma still very much on the dry side. And therefore the La Nina weather influence type pattern continues to kind of play out. So that helps that equation out probably the most. And chart wise, I think the wheat market is attracting more of the outside speculative money at this point. The chart pattern isn't all bad when you look at it from a weekly and monthly basis also.
And we saw that March wheat go above its 20-day moving average today, tested the 100-day moving average. Do you think Kansas City might try another run at that double top at 375?
Well, I would say Kansas City is in pretty good shape to do that. The way the market has performed, it kind of looks like this low here we made here prior to the report on the wheat market could turn out to be a fairly important cyclical low, and that kind of teased this market to kind of rally all the way into the spring time frame.
March corn, of course, at 212 and three quarters while it lost 1 3/4 cents on the day. Technically speaking, it did some nice things. It moved above its 20-day moving average and also tested, what, the 100?
Well, I don't watch those moving averages as well as everybody else does. I do what I've been kind of watching on corn to see if this March corn can make a stand above this 210 area on this correction. And so far, so good. We did go down below 210 there for a couple ticks early here this morning. We opened down underneath that level. But as the day wore on, the market began to kind of pull out of that area, and we were only down a penny and three quarters here for the close. So I think the 210 area is kind of a critical benchmark here for this corn market to hold above, and if we can, that keeps the underlying trend sideways to higher that kind of unfolded here during the month of November in place, and it kind of keeps the corn market in position to, you know, maybe be in pretty good position to pull out of a winter low and go move on into the spring seasonal strength time frame.
And if it does not hold the 210, does that open the 199.5 to 210 area?
Well, you would quickly it would go down to the 205. That would be the spot, and then the next spot then would be $2. It would probably move in nickel increments on the way down.
And now we need to talk about those soybeans, which were down double digits on the day. The March at 572, down 12.5. Although I got to say that you did see some holding on continuation charts and the gap at 561.
Well, you did, but the decline here that this bean market has had, and then, of course, with today's decline, pretty well rips up the whatever hope we had of salvaging the sideways to higher climb that kind of began here during late November. But we're back to kind of where we were in early December before the market really began to take hold on the weather situation out of South America. So I suppose chartists, what I would probably be looking at is can the market kind of make a stand at these levels, begin to consolidate and hold their own and see whether or not the market can kind of regroup and pull out of here. And, of course, fundamentally that pretty well depends upon how the trade reads the improved weather situation in South America and if everybody gets the rain that the market has kind of been anticipating here over the past 3-4 days.
And I suppose exports, too. The five-year average is 50.2 of the USDA forecast at this particular point in the year, but cumulative shipments for beans are only 40.8%.
Well, that's what probably stung the bean market here the most today on today's reports is that for some unknown reason, and I don't know why, but the trade was just basically looking for the production increase to be passed into carry out or ending stocks level. I don't know why anybody wasn't prepared for USDA to lower exports, and that kind of goes with corn too, because export sales pace has been lagging dramatically here over the past, ever since the marketing year began. And this is what kind of got the bean market terribly bearish here this morning, as USDA did whack 70 million bushels out of the export projection, and that along with the production increase took ending stocks over the 500 billion bushel mark, and that is very, very cushy ending stocks level that may or may not realize at the end of the day. But if South America comes through this growing season without any big dent in their production, the bean market's in some pretty bad shape when you look at balance sheets.
And I would suppose that would mean that we might see prices under $5.
Well, anything can happen, Dave. I don't think you're going to do that right away. But I do think, South America still got they got a ways yet to grow their crop. Remember, last year the dry weather really didn't begin to take the yields down until after February 1st, and we're only at January 12th right now. So there is still plenty of time to ding up the South American crop, and Who knows what's going to happen here in the 2006 crop year here in the United States.
Let's turn our attention then to the Merck, where you think that feeders are down and out, and after being dinged up pretty good the last couple of days, and by golly, they had a nice little rally today.
Well, chart-wise, it's considered what we would call as an inside day because you did have such a hard down. There was no follow-through, so you basically consolidated inside yesterday's sharp down, wide range day. The key here will be what happens probably tomorrow. So you always, technically, you kind of watch to see what direction the market goes after it posts an inside day, whether or not, you know, the breakdown was valid or if the it was just kind of a bear trap type situation.
So give us the number to keep an eye on tomorrow then.
Well, you got whatever today's high is and the low. So today's high in the April contract here was 112.65, and the low was 111.45. So if markets begin to move outside of that range in a significant way, that kind of gives you the a pretty good indication what's going to happen to the feeder market.
And what kind of advice do you have for hedgers today? Hold them, I guess.
Hold them. No. don't have any specific advice probably as we go over here in the grain complex. I do think, as I mentioned earlier, that the corn market needs to kind of hold this 210 area to keep it going sideways to higher climb as the winter here progresses. Beans do need to probably make a stand here real quickly, or otherwise the market's vulnerable to some new lows as we finish out the winter. But the reports behind us, a lot of times this is the beginning of the end in a way. It kind of finishes off the old crop year, and over the next week here, I think the trade will begin to focus on the 2006 crop year and all of the uncertainties that go along with that.
Thanks much, Dan.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services. He is in Bloomington, Illinois. Taking a look at Mike Sola's two-state forecast tonight. Increasing cloudiness with showers arriving in the south and in central Illinois. Lows ranging from 32 in northwestern Illinois to 46 degrees in southern Indiana. Tomorrow, windy and turning colder in western Illinois and in northern Indiana. Cloudy with snow showers. Elsewhere cloudy with areas of rain changing to snow. Highs ranging from 34 degrees in far northwestern Illinois to near 50 degrees in the far south. In agricultural news, the American Farm Bureau Federation on Wednesday announced the appointment of a 2006 Input Cost Review Panel. South Dakota Farm Bureau President Scott Vanderwall will be a panel member.
Well, we're going to be taking a look at the input cost side of our business in agriculture, and obviously that's a very grave concern on the part of ag producers right now. We're going to try to identify some resources that are available to assist producers in reducing and managing their higher costs in 2006. We're going to try to identify some financial planning and risk management tools that are out there. Basically, we're not going to be inventing anything new. There's not time for that, but we're going to identify them and put them in a list so that people can look at that and see what might be out there. We're also going to take a look at the environment, regulatory environment, and identify any opportunities for relief that there might be there.
Delegates to the American Farm Bureau Federation annual meeting in Nashville this week also approved a resolution calling for reduced fertilizer import tariffs. Vanderwall says Farm Bureau delegates are looking at the input cost issue from all angles.
Whether it's keeping fertilizer out or just increasing our prices, our delegates said let's lower those tariffs so we can at least get some price relief on this fertilizer that's coming in. The fertilizer industry in our country has really slowed down, in fact shut down in some areas, for a number of reasons, availability of raw materials, Some of the starter fertilizers, the ingredients that go into those are used in food products, and they make more money on those, so that's where those resources go. And we just think this is one piece of the puzzle that we can put together to help provide some relief for producers.
The 87th annual Farm Bureau meeting wrapped up yesterday. A reduction in the tax break on renewable fuels could help the industry develop further in Illinois. Rachel Lipman has the details of the bipartisan proposal.
The measure reduces the sales tax credit motorists receive when they purchase corn and soybean-based fuels. That will bring the state an extra $50 million to be used for research and development in the renewable fuels industry. John Kufis is the president of the Illinois Corn Growers Association.
It generates 22,000 jobs for the people of Illinois, jobs that will stay in Illinois. It creates significant tax gains by the economic development that will happen as a result of this bill. This package is very good for agriculture, it's very good for Illinois, and it's very good for the citizens of the state.
Kufis says the additional money will help with one of the problems in marketing the products by increasing the number of gas stations that sell the blends. That could lead to more vehicles on the road able to run on the fuels. I'm Rachel Lipman.
A private group has been formed to oversee the National Animal Identification System. The United States Animal Identification Organization held their first meeting via teleconference Tuesday, where members of the board were elected. Among them is National Cattlemen's Beef Association member Rick Stott of Boise, Idaho.
The sole purpose of this organization is to provide a entity, a nonprofit entity, that's managed by the industry to manage the database, the animal ID movement database.
Stott says the database, as envisioned by the new group, meets the goals many agricultural groups have for the National Livestock ID System.
It provides for a nice shield for confidentiality for producers. It's a nonprofit entity. The cost of the actual management of the system will be very low. We expect that it will be less than 30 cents for the life of the animal for all of the events and transactions that need to be recorded for the movement of those animals. So it's going to be run very efficiently, effectively.
Stott says costs for running the database will also be shared by all segments of the meat industry. The group has submitted a memorandum of understanding to USDA to form a strategic partnership and fulfill Secretary Mike Johann's request for an industry-developed database. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Kathy Ferguson and Morris at 815-941-3758. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Joining us now for our look at the cash grain market is Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois. Good afternoon, Bill.
Good afternoon, Dave.
I suppose the lock was already on the soybean and corn bins, but after price action today at the Chicago Board of Trade, I got to think they probably spot welded them shut.
Well, I think that's probably true on the soybean side of it. Really, if you look at the corn side, I was just looking at some things here before we got on here, and really we're down, we're about maybe 5 to 7 cents off the highs in this area as far as the cash corn bid goes. So I don't know that it's necessarily down so much that you, if you didn't get enough sold on the rally, that you can't step in here and maybe get some additional bushels sold. You know, it's always easier to sell when the price was $1.60 and it gets back up to $1.95. It's a lot easier to do that than it is after it's been at, $2.10 and then try to sell it at $2. So I guess on the corn side of it, I'm not sure that should be the case.
So corn base bids essentially steady. I did see soybean bases rising, though.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. Dave, with your initial comment, I mean, I think the bin doors are well legit, and you're not going to see a lot of beans move right now. And the demand side of it is, as they showed in the report this morning, it isn't great, but it's still, we're still looking at good demand, you know, when you look at past years.
The question is, how full up are processors? I saw this morning Central Illinois, they went to their 9 under, but changed it 2 down. But then in Peoria, 21 under, but 9.5 to the positive side today.
Yeah, the river just in general has really been pretty strong. You know, if you look back versus a week ago, part of that's just a little bit of a drop in freight, but most of it's just, I think, maybe we're starting to see at these the lower levels some pickup in the demand going to the Gulf, which, you know, the processor in that area would have to compete with.
There were rumors that China took 6 to 8 cargoes of soybeans today or in the last couple of days, 6 from the U.S. and 2 from South America. So maybe there is something to that being the reason of the basis rally.
Yeah, I think so. And, I think we're going to see eventually here Argentina, who's been competing with us pretty hard on the export side of it, is going to have to slow down as they come into the end of their growing season before the new crop starts.
What about your bids today?
Cash corn is at 194, soybeans at 540.
Anything to add before I let you go?
No, I don't think so.
Thank you very much, Bill.
Thanks, Dave.
Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing, he is in Lexington, Illinois. The 2005 growing season in the state of Illinois emphasized the interaction of weeds, crops, weather, pathogens, and insects. Todd Gleason files this report on how it all shook out for one extension entomologist.
Here's how Kevin Steffi sees last growing season and the ecological interactions. First, the early start to the planting season, says the University of Illinois Extension entomologist, favored the survival of insects such as corn rootworms and first-generation European corn borers.
But that was followed by cool and dry weather that slowed down corn growth, and we started talking about the possibility of insects like white grubs, wireworms, and other secondary insects become a problem. And actually, that didn't really develop during the time when corn was growing very slowly. A few odds and ends in terms of reports of those problems, but really not very widespread.
And then the weather turned dry. The root system of the corn did not develop well, and under those conditions, most methods of controlling the western corn rootworm began to fail, or at least fade.
Actually, by late May, early June, we were predicting a delayed hatch of corn rootworms, but the high temperatures sped up the accumulation of degree days, and as a result, we had a rapid onset of root injury and a whole bunch of reports of poor performance of rootworm control products, as I mentioned, that have been applied as early as early April. We also had a very early explosive emergence of rootworm adults that led to additional problems related to pollination. In fact, Japanese beetles joined with rootworm adults in clipping the silks and threatening the pollination and challenged us with some of the most difficult questions I think we received during the year.
On the soybean side of things, Kevin Steffi says there had been some anticipation that the bean leaf beetle would be a problem. It was not. Predictions that the soybean aphid would be a problem did not come true either. And that, says Steffi, may be in large part because of the hot, dry weather.
But then, of course, the hot, dry weather took over, and that actually limited the survival and development of soybean aphids, but it promoted the survival and development of two-spotted spider mites, not surprising very much, at least at the very beginning, appearing like the occurrences in 1988.
The two-spotted spider mite appeared earlier this season than it did in 1988. Steffi thinks that's because so many fields in the state are treated with glyphosate. It is a contact killer and allows weeds to grow in the fall. no residual effect to control them. This, contends Steffi, provides a nice overwintering site for female spider mites, and then the glyphosate is put back on. The weeds are killed in the spring, and the mites head for the soybeans. In 2005, that created some serious problems. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on AM 580 Web. This is Dave Dickey joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is meteorologist Peter Levitt. Good afternoon, Peter.
Good afternoon, David.
Well, it looks like over the last little bit of time, all those concerns about dry conditions down in Argentina have gone south.
Well, that's true. They have, although they did get some additional rain down there. They had the relief from the rain this past week, but the outlook is again for it to get a little dry, and they're a little bit concerned about some of their summer grains, the oil seeds in central Argentina. But it's still, Brazil is still a whole story for the most part, and Brazil weather has been very good. They're also concerned that extreme southern Brazil this coming week for being a little bit dry, but they're looking for perfection, and what they've had so far is very good. So I don't see a problem down there, you know, nothing that would get people very excited.
I guess traders have been complaining a little bit about Paraguay, Mato Grosso do Sul, those kind of places, but you're saying that really it's not that bad.
Yeah, Paraguay was one of the large contributors, in my view, to Brazil's wheat crop. Soybean crop, but that's another story, with a porous border there. But still, their production is probably the one that's going to be most affected by the dry weather this season.
Here in the Midwest, it looks like we're getting a bunch of little clipper systems that just race across.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, they interrupt this this warmish weather that you've had. Well, warmish, let's call it warm, with the temperature well up in the 50s today. Cold front comes along, doesn't pick up Gulf moisture until the front gets about halfway through Illinois, so that you're only going to get a lick and a promise in eastern Iowa and western Illinois. But then you get substantial precipitation from central Illinois on eastward, and Indiana and Ohio get the bulk of the amounts. That's going to happen tomorrow. We're going to have this wet weather in there. The cold front comes by, and what do you get? Well, cooler weather, but you're still not down to normal. You're going from today maybe something of the order of 20 degrees above normal today, max and min-wise, and then you'll be about 10 to 12 degrees above normal on Saturday, Sunday. Next system comes along late Monday and Tuesday. This one may catch a little bit more of Illinois. We'll have the Gulf open a little bit longer on that one. So I think we can get some showers up in there midweek. And then that goes by and the temperatures cool off again, but still above normal. So for the week, I think you're going to see temperatures averaging above 10 degrees above normal, you know, maybe something order of 12 to 14 degrees above normal, coolish toward the end. And that's getting through January in as comfortable a way as you can, I guess.
Should producers in western Illinois and points west begin to become a little bit concerned about missing these rain events?
Yes, they should. Because I don't see any of these systems really taking out much of the area. And the deep moisture, that is the subsoil moisture, which is reflected in the Palmer indices, those are still showing a drought across the southern counties of Iowa into, well, pretty much along the counties or the districts bordering I-80 in that region. So it's still very dry. It may not show in the topsoil, especially this time of year, but when you have to get moisture from below as we move through the spring months, we'd better get this pattern changed or they're going to have a struggle.
What about potential for La Nina?
Oh, we are in a La Nina pattern. Well, yeah, I think it's there. It's really been there since late last summer. The problem with identifying it has been the fact that they sort of changed the rules on what constitutes a La Nina about 10 or so years ago when they found out that the ocean is bigger than just off the west coast of South America. cold temperatures off of the coast of South America used to be La Nina, warm temperatures used to be El Nino, and then they discovered they had temperatures they could access all the way to the dateline in the Central Pacific. And that pattern has not seen the cooling that we've seen just off the coast. So now they use an area much farther west offshore to define La Niñas and El Niños. And so it's been sort of a weakish El Nino into a weakish La Nina, which we're now. But I think that cool water is going to just extend all the way out there. We're in a La Nina pattern. What that means for us over here in the Midwest is means that you can have drought. Now, the reason I phrase it that way is that you usually don't get droughts in the first year of an El Nino pattern, but you can get them beyond that, and you can get them in La Nina patterns. So it just raises the probabilities a little bit above normal. But persistence is still the key, and we'd better see some of that dryness getting wiped out this spring, or else they're in for a tough start in the western Corn Belt state.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Mm-hmm.
Agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt, and that is today's closing market report. Remember, you can listen to today's futures analysis, cash grain analysis, and agricultural weather on the web, as well as podcast this cast. Have it delivered directly to your computer on a daily basis. To do either of those, go to our website at WILL.UIUC.edu. If you're already there listening to this broadcast now, just go ahead and page up a bit and you'll find instructions for podcasting. This is Dave Dickey.